Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Thursday, May 20th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, Policymakers Getting Nervous. This is a question, but I am answering this in the affirmative. Yes, policymakers are getting nervous. In fact, I think they have been nervous for quite a while. My apologies for taking yesterday off, and I'm probably going to end up taking tomorrow off as well, have some things to take care of. But just letting you know, I'll do my best to do something over the weekend. So yesterday, again, we saw a ton of volatility in the cryptocurrency space, especially with Bitcoin. That is the cat's pajamas, I guess you can say, when it comes to the cryptocurrency world. That is where all the attention goes to. That's the big granddaddy. And the podcast that we did the other day was called Bitcoin or Bitcoin. And if you've been with me for a while, you know that I lean towards it being a Bitcoin, all right? Because when you have a couple of people who can send out a tweet, such as Elon Musk, because that's who it's been, there are some others, but Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, gets, you know, a lot of the attention. And I think that's why he does it, too. He wants a lot of this attention. But when somebody like that can put out a tweet either supporting Bitcoin or criticizing Bitcoin, and the price moves up or down accordingly, how much validity does this thing have? Can you not see that this is a joke? I mean, don't call it an investment. If it was an investment, you couldn't move it from a tweet from somebody like Elon Musk, or anybody for that matter. I mean, with the exception perhaps of the government, because maybe there's confiscation or a major crackdown on something, what have you. But when a market is that fragile where somebody can come out and simply say this, that, or the other, and the thing just collapses, come on, don't call it a store of value. If you want to say you're speculating, if you want to say you're riding the bubble, if you want to say you want a winning lottery ticket, have at it. I'll at least have some respect for you. Again, a lot of those questions remain unanswered. Who created it? Are you fine if it turns out to be a nation that is hostile to your country? Are you okay with that? If it's some sort of terroristic organization, are you okay with that? That you're supporting this thing? Are you perfectly fine with that? I mean, I don't know what your opinions may or may not be with respect to the environment, but we know what's going on with how much energy consumption is used for the process of Bitcoin, for mining it and using it for transaction purposes. Are you okay with that? I mean, in the list goes down the line. I'm not just picking on Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency. You can pick any asset. You can pick so many other major corporations. I mean, are you okay with that? I mean, look at Apple, look at so many other American corporations that do business in China, have basically sweatshops producing their products. Are you okay with that? And then you have companies like Apple come out, they have the audacity to come out and say, we care about people. Look at this humanitarian crisis there, blah, 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 blah. But they want to pay. They don't want to look at themselves. They don't want to point the finger at themselves and say, look what's going on in China. Look at the suicide nets that are outside of some of those buildings where these products get manufactured because these people are working to the bone and basically live in those factories as well. No, don't pay any attention to that. Just get the cool hip thing that barely does anything different than the last version did. Don't pay any attention to this. This is the world we live in. And getting back to the point, does anybody really care? Or do you just look at your retirement account, your brokerage account, and you say, well, as long as it's going up, I don't care who's dying. I don't care who's in a sweatshop. I don't care if there's suicide nets out of factories in other parts of the world. I couldn't care less. I don't care about the environment. I don't care about hostile nations against mine. I don't care about terroristic organizations, money laundering. I don't care about any of this stuff. I just want my account balance to go up. Yeah, because I think that's probably the gist of what's going on here. You know, tenfold. Nobody has the guts to say it, because I never hear this argument made. I think it's one that needs to be made, because I think this is part of our downfall. We don't care about each other. Really don't give a damn about much of the planet either for what we're doing and lots of parts of it. But as long as your account keeps going up, people look the other way. Same thing with the bailout money. Your sit down and shut up money. Sit down, shut up. Don't ask questions. Don't protest. Don't riot. Don't vote for serious change. Don't look at third parties. Don't look at fourth or fifth parties. Just keep the thing going. That's all it was. And it was a pass-through bailout. You get the cash, now you got to go pay your bills, blah, 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 blah. We've been down that road before. But getting back to Bitcoin, we saw the volatility. Some estimates have it about $9 billion worth of losses over this massive decline that took us to about $30,000 a coin. A lot of people got stopped out. A lot of leverage, margin calls. It's a crazy market. It is a crazy market. If you want to hold it, that's your business. It's your risk. It's your money. Do what you want. But just please get off of these arguments that it's a store of value, that it's the next goal, that it's this, that, or the other. It isn't. Okay? It just isn't. Again, it doesn't mean that cryptocurrencies are all a fraud. They're all a con. I don't believe that to be true. I think there are some use cases for them. But you have to have a reasonable conversation. And with respect to some of the others, you can. It's just this cult of fascination with Bitcoin and Tesla. Again, these are the poster children for the virtual everything bubble that we are in. But with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies getting all of this attention, you are now seeing a lot of governments starting to pay closer attention and actually coming up with a framework to start to regulate it or perhaps ban it, depending on where you are. We talked about this the other day as well with the Chinese coming out and a few of their regulatory agencies making statements saying, look, you cannot transact in Bitcoin. There's not going to be any exchanges. Okay, so it took a hit, understandably so. Now, you have the Treasury Department here in the U.S. and you have the Federal Reserve, our central bank, coming out. This has to be a coordinated effort. They talk to each other all the time. Now they're coming out and mentioning that, well, from the Treasury standpoint, they want to put together a task force to go after tax evasion, just in general, but then also go after cryptocurrencies and making sure that those profits or those transactions, they were taxed. Because Janet Yellen and company are looking to bring in another $700 billion to our coffers because we need the money, folks, because we're broke as a joke. You understand? And even $700 billion is only going to amount, if they should get it, would only amount to about 10% of the amount of spending that we're doing this year alone. Okay? For reference, for perspective, we bring in about $3.5 trillion in taxation, across all forms of taxation, $3.5 trillion. We're spending $7. We're on the precipice here, on the verge of seeing another $4 trillion deficit this year alone. And if the U.S. debt clock is correct at current rates, in 2025 at this time, we'll have a national debt of $50 trillion. Okay, so don't tell me that this is not a first world banana republic. Hell, we're on the road to becoming a third world banana republic if we do not shape up. All right, so just pay attention to that. Policymakers are getting nervous. They want to crack down on Bitcoin. They need more money. Janet Yellen's back out there talking about a global minimum tax because policymakers, politicians are afraid that corporations are going to start looking abroad, even more so than what they already do, looking for those advantages, whether it's wages, whether it's taxes, whether it's the regulatory environment. So many variables can go into it in attracting companies to leave their home country and go elsewhere. All of these countries are afraid of this. One politician, one central banker after the next. Believe me when I tell you. And in the not too distant future, we're probably going to end up seeing capital controls, just flat out capital controls, which is one of the reasons why I think a lot of foreign money, especially out of perhaps Russia and Ukraine and China, most definitely China, is making its way into Australia, New Zealand, parts of Europe, throughout the United States, throughout Canada, and bidding up real estate prices because they're trying to get their money out of their home country. The smart money knows what's going to end up happening. And so if you know what hits the fan, a lot of countries are just going to say, no, you can't send your money elsewhere. It's all staying here. And so this, to me, this global minimum tax, this is them starting to sweat. They're concerned. They know that this is a house of cards built on a foundation of sand. It's not just me that understands this and a handful of other people out there. They just don't want to admit it. Because they would be at fault. They would be the ones to blame. And there is no accountability, responsibility, or leadership that exists within any of these people. But keep voting for them and expect change. So that's something to pay attention to. We talked about central bank digital coins or currencies that are coming. Depending on the country, it's either in development, it's in a testing phase, some of them are already being launched. So it's coming. Now, this might be part of the changing narrative in the hopes from these central banks that it gives the market hopes that now things are going to be more efficient, more effective, blah, 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 blah. So now our market system can be better improved upon. So it's just going to help assist this recovery, which, of course, we're not in. But that'll be the ever-changing narrative to keep moving the stick. Always something else to look forward to, right? But now you got Jay Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, coming out and saying, well, the Federal Reserve is going to issue a report this summer on cryptocurrencies. So they're going to compete with the already existing private cryptocurrencies. That's what I stated the other day in Bitcoin or Bitcoin. Governments are going to compete with it because, and really, once the government gets involved, there is no competition. It's going to crowd it out because the government will ban it, or they will restrict it, or they will highly regulate it. And if you don't comply, they'll confiscate it, they'll arrest you, they'll fine you, they'll tax you. They can do that stuff, and they will. They don't like, governments do not like competition. And while cryptocurrencies may have their day in the sun, and what I mean by that is having some staying power to be around for the long term. That could happen, but it ain't going to happen anytime soon. Because governments are here, and they are not going to allow the new kid on the block just to come in and take over. Don't be naive. Don't be stupid. That day may come once this total system collapse occurs, and I think that it will, but that's not going to happen tomorrow. That's a process. It's going to take a while. And the rebuilding process may very well include those cryptocurrencies, some of those cryptocurrencies and those technologies that they bring to the table. That's understandable. But we're a far ways from that. Now you also have the ECB, the European Central Bank, putting out a statement. They're now saying, and get this, I mean, the audacity, I mean, they really, really take us for idiots. They have to with the statements that they put out. But the ECB is now putting out a statement saying, hey, you know what? There's a lot of global debt out there. It is dwarfing the GFC, the Great Financial Crisis, and it's dwarfing the Eurozone crisis. Yeah, yeah. Oh, and what might that mean? That might mean that this could lead, and of course, when they say could, will is what they mean. It will lead to financial instability. Yet who's responsible for a lot of this extra debt being thrown into the system? Oh, that's right. The central banks themselves. They never want to stop themselves from actually doing it. They'll just pick out and say, hey, yeah, we may have went too far, but it wasn't our fault. They're always going to blame somebody else. It'll be the government's fault. It'll be corporations' fault. It'll be the people's fault. It's never going to be their fault. That's the game that they play. So I just want you to understand this. They put out statements, their own reports to ECB. All of this debt, again, dwarfing the GFC, the Euro debt crisis, which was a big one, and it's going to lead to financial instability. What a no-brainer. So you just got to pay attention to what these people say, folks. Got to read between the lines. Recent report from the Federal Reserve talked about the same thing, financial instability, but nobody wants to pay attention to this stuff. They're telling you that financial instability is coming down the pike. Something that I've been talking about for the past couple of years. But now they're finally starting to admit it because at least they can then say, hey, we told you in this one report that nobody reads, it's at least there in writing and it's dated. So it's a little bit of cover your you-know-what. But of course, it's too little too late. So just be on the lookout, because these markets are extremely fragile. Again, all you have to do is ask yourself a very basic and simple question. When you observe the balance sheets of one central bank after the next, especially the majors, the Federal Reserve, the ECB, Bank of England, People's Bank of China, Bank of Japan, etc., you look at the massive increase to those figures. And we're going to get to that here momentarily with the Feds. Take it away. If you took all of that funny money away that they just conjured up out of thin air, would equity prices be where they are today? The answer is clearly no. You don't need to be an economist or a mathematician or a financial analyst to figure that one out. Would bond prices be this high? No, probably not. Would real estate prices be this high? No, probably not. Policymakers, central bankers, politicians, all of them, the whole crew, they never want to feel any pain. That's exactly what most people are feeling right now, unfortunately. And a lot of it gets underreported or it's not even discussed at all. And I'm not just talking about here in the United States, I'm talking globally. With the inflation, the stagflation, the hyperinflation, depending on where you are, the collapse of societies, again, depending where you are, we talk about these things all the time. They don't want to talk about it. Doesn't serve their narrative, doesn't serve their purpose, don't want any pain. If prices came down, a lot of people would benefit from that. But not the 1%, not the 10%. And that's, and again, I don't want to get into all this class warfare junk. But when you print all this money, it's not because of production. It's not because of organic growth. That I support. That's what we want to see more of. That's a real economy. And those who are contributing to that true organic growth, that needs to be applauded. And those who are partaking in it need to be rewarded. Become a millionaire, become a billionaire, more power to you, fantastic. Because you are bringing a good or a service to the marketplace that the markets want. And you're doing a great job at it. Good for you. That's what it's about. Printing money is not production. And boy, oh boy, is this going to get extremely expensive. They can't even hide it in the CPI and the PPI numbers that they threw out last week that we went over. It's only going to get worse. This is not transitory. This is structural. We're going to be dealing with these issues for several years, in my opinion. Because we haven't seen, all we've seen is the tip of the iceberg. Even with the protests and the riots and the coups and the revolutions, believe me, when that stuff really starts to take hold, we ain't seen nothing yet. And I mentioned to this audience probably, well, it had to have been several months ago into 2020, I would bet, probably even close to when this whole pandemic started. I was telling this audience that at some point you're going to start seeing countries begin to hoard their commodities, their agricultural products, and that's what we're starting to see in a handful of countries across the globe right now. Starting to see some hoarding because prices are just going through the roof. And so what some of these countries are doing is they are banning or they are restricting exports of some agricultural products and some other commodities because the prices are too high. And these politicians are at least smart enough to know that revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. And when you're and most of this is in poor to middle income countries right now. Again, that's where it starts. It's those weakest links, and it's going to make its way into more developed countries. Believe me when I tell you. But they're doing this because they know, again, that revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. They know how fragile the system is. They know that, you know, a significant portion of their population spend a lot of their income on food just to survive. And if those prices go up just a little bit, these people, these families are going to know what's going on, and they're going to take to the streets. They might shut down production. They might go on strike, and there's just going to be even more supply chain restrictions and disruptions, and that will continue to put upward price pressure on so many different commodities. This is the cycle that we're in, and we're not going to get out of it anytime soon. And this is just sort of something that I've been thinking. Maybe it's true, maybe it isn't, but just an observation. China has been doing a lot of buying of everything. Now, again, this is going to be one reason why they, you know, attempt to juice their economy. You talk about smoke and mirrors, talk about a facade. It's China. But are they hoarding, too? Are they buying up a lot of things because maybe they're preparing for war? I mean, they're doing a lot of saber rattling in their neck of the woods, the Philippines, Taiwan. Are they going to try to poke the bear somewhere? Are they going to try to see what they can get away with? Just something maybe keep in the back of your mind. Let's get to market performance, and we'll get to the initial jobless claims report, and then we'll sign off with the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. So market performance, we have the dollar index at 89.77, 89.77. Bitcoin has rebounded again with its volatility, just crazy. But Bitcoin is at $40,500 a coin currently. Not too much movement right now in the Forex markets. We have the futures markets for the Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 0.1%, which is the case for the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 as well. Cash trade in Japan is putting on a gain of about 0.75%. A sea of green across the pond today in Europe. German exchange putting on a gain of 1.7%. Solid performance there. We have the cash trade in Australia flat, but slightly in the red. And Chinese stocks are also in the red, down 0.5%. On the commodity front, we have WTI at $62.22 a barrel, Brent $65.25, natural gas $2.95, so still flirting with the three handle. Gasoline pulling back a little bit at $2.05. Gold and silver still holding strong. I like their movement, even though there's been a little bit of a sell-off in silver, but nothing major. Again, I like what the precious metals are doing right now. Gold is at $1,875 an ounce. Silver is at $27.73 an ounce. Copper pulling back a little bit at $4.54 a pound. Lumber unchanged. And to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note, 1.63%. So little change from the prior day. All right, so there you have that. On to the Department of Labor's initial jobless claims report. So for the week ending May 15th, on a seasonally adjusted basis, the number comes in at 444,000. Okay, so one of the lowest numbers we've seen since the start of the pandemic. Non-seasonally adjusted, the number comes in at 455,000. For the week ending May 8th, continuing claims came in at 3.75 million. Non-seasonally adjusted, continuing claims, 3.68 million. For the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program for the week ending May 15th, 95,000. So combined with the PUA and the initial jobless claims, we're still well below the peak that we witnessed during the depths of the Great Financial Crisis. So that's good. And this was the narrative today as to why stocks were in the green today. Because the number was good, you know, 444,000. It's still not great, but it's a lot better than what we've seen throughout last year. And it's that continuing trend to the downside, which is what we want to see. The question is, how long lived is this going to be? So again, the markets just want to hear anything as an excuse to justify a rally. Anything. And again, the markets, no bad news, no terrible news, not even any good news. It's all fantastic. If this number had been terrible, if it had been another 700,000, markets very well may have rallied again because they would have said, oh, good, good, because there's some taper talk in the markets. Now, surely that's off the table. That means the Fed's going to keep printing. That means Joe Biden and the Democrats are going to say we got to spend more. And that's all it is, because that's all these markets are, folks. It's a joke. Another thing that keeps pumping these markets higher, or at least attempting to, I know we've been in a recent sell-off here a little bit, but share buybacks? Oh, yeah, share buybacks. It's not about investment. Oh, no, no, no. It's not about improving and increasing productivity. No, no, no. It's all about financial engineering. It's all about making sure that the C-suite is well compensated so that they can financially engineer, you know, fix their share price, or at least attempt to do so. So share buybacks are on the rise again. And so is M&A activity, mergers and acquisitions. Why? Oh, well, I'll tell you why. Because this whole system is about consolidation, something I've been telling you about for over a year. It's all about squeezing the little guy out of business and consolidating everything else. That's what's going on here. And when you have cost to borrow money at virtually nothing, well, they're incentivized to do this. So you have fewer choices, which means these producers are going to have more pricing power. And what do you think they're going to do with your prices? You think they're going to drop them? What planet were you born on? All right. In aggregate, regular, state, federal employees, newly discharged vets, pandemic unemployment assistance program, pandemic emergency UC program, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and work share gives us a grand total of $15.9 million, almost $16 million, but $15.9 million Americans still claiming some form of unemployment insurance benefit. This is for the week ending May 1st. The aggregate figure lags by a couple of weeks. This is a week-over-week decrease of some 886,000. The biggest drops were in the PUA program, a week-over-week decrease of 679,000. In the PEUC program, a week-over-week decline of 150,000. Okay, so 15.9 million gives us a de facto unemployment rate of about 11.5%. The official rate is now at 6.1% because of that dismal jobs report that we received at the beginning of the month for the month of April. 266,000 jobs, quote unquote, created in the month of April when everybody and their mother was basically expecting 1 million. I mean, that was the word on the street. Some people were even claiming that it was going to be higher than that, maybe 1.2 million. Ah, yeah, 266,000. What baloney? That's all this is, because if it was 1 million or 1.2 million, oh my goodness, you want to talk about policymakers getting nervous. They're already boxed in. That box would have been so small if that jobs number was 1 million, because it completely just blows up in their face. There's a recovery, but yeah, wink, wink, nod, nod, not really. And that, you know, we have to have a reason to justify quantitative easing, and we have to have a reason to justify spending hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars that we don't have. Well, 1 million doesn't jive. Doesn't jive with that narrative. But 266,000. Oh boy, yeah, we got to do more. What a joke. I mean, you can't even make this crap up. But this is what we have to deal with. Speaking of crap that we have to deal with, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet making a new all-time record high, $7.922 trillion. $7.922 trillion, a week-over-week increase of some $90 billion. This is one of the largest week-over-week increases in quite a while. And this is because policymakers are getting nervous. The stock market, as I've stated before, is a national security issue. We are basically at war with China on an economic standpoint. And the stock market is very important, psychologically speaking, as well. This is basically the last leg of the three-legged stool that's still standing, if you will, if that's the analogy you want to use. This thing goes, all bets are off. And it's not, again, it's not just here in the United States. This is global equity markets. This is it. That is a psychological factor. And if that comes down, whether it's a crash, whether it's a little bit here, a little bit there, it's not going to bode too well. Because we are just living on borrowed time. At the end of the day, that's all this is. As I say here all the time, give me a few trillion dollars and I'll show you a good time too. But that's not how it works. You can't just print money and expect miracles to happen, economic recoveries to happen. This is not an economic recovery. This is a joke. And all you have to do, as I stated previously, is ask yourself that question. If we took out all of this funny money, where would these markets be? They wouldn't even be close to where they are today. And we still have people on all of these financial media stations saying, oh yeah, this is an oversold condition in the markets, even though they're only a few percentage points away from all-time highs. And on valuation metric after valuation metric, they're all at all-time highs or near all-time highs. And the only other reference points that you have are 1929, before the Great Depression. The Nifty 50s, which was in the 70s, that's just what they called the market then. A handful of stocks. The dot-com boom and bust. And the Great Financial Crisis. All of those ended terribly. Yet these people want to come on and say that the market's oversold, we're going to rally, this is going to keep going. And we very well may, because one central bank after the next keeps juicing it. But this is something to pay attention to. Because if the Fed should want to say, oh, we're going to start tapering, we're going to start looking, you know, maybe there is some truth in tapering. Maybe we should do it because, yeah, well, after all, real estate prices are at all-time highs. Why do we continue to buy $40 billion a month of mortgage-backed securities? Right? I mean, that was a common sense question, something we've been asking here for months. Finally, the question gets posed to Jay Powell. Couldn't answer it, but maybe it actually got them thinking. And so you're starting to hear some rumors here and there that maybe if they actually do start to taper, that's where it will be. They'll cut back on those mortgage-backed securities. But they'll still continue buying Uncle Sam's debt because nobody else wants it because it's junk. Gee, I wonder why. You see how all this stuff is connected? But nobody wants to piece it together. Nobody wants to tell the real story of what's going on. And when markets have their day with all of this, it's going to be too late for the vast majority of people. They're just not going to see it coming. Because they think stocks only go up. They don't know what a bear market is. They think Elon Musk and a handful of other frat boys on social media just have the answers to all the questions. And they don't. They're very much a part of the problem as well. So this continues. Something to pay attention to. This was a big week-over-week increase at a time when markets have been selling off. So if this just isn't another piece of evidence that tells you who the Federal Reserve is actually working for and what's going on here, I don't know what else will. But then lastly, because we've been talking about it over the past couple of weeks, and I'll let you go, celebrations in Gaza as ceasefire takes hold. Israeli security cabinet and Hamas agree to Egyptian-brokered ceasefire to halt 11 days of fighting. A ceasefire came into force in the Gaza Strip in the early hours of Friday morning after Egypt brokered an agreement between Israel and Hamas to halt 11 days of conflict. A statement from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office said the security cabinet had unanimously accepted the recommendation to accept an Egyptian initiative for an unconditional ceasefire. Palestinian groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad then confirmed the ceasefire in a statement saying it would come into force at 2 a.m. on Friday. Thousands of people in Gaza and the Palestinian territories poured onto the streets to celebrate the ceasefire, waving flags and flashing V signs for victory. At least 232 Palestinians, including 65 children, have been killed in the Israeli bombardment. On the Israeli side, 12 people, including 2 children, have been killed. So thank God there is a ceasefire for the time being. Hopefully it holds for a very long time. Again, folks, so much dry kindling all over the place. The smallest of sparks can ignite anything. And we witnessed what was taking place over the past couple of weeks between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And a lot of people injured, a lot of people killed. And this started because the Palestinians were throwing rocks a couple of weeks ago. Okay, you throw rocks and this is what happens. What a crazy world. But policymakers are getting nervous. Make no mistake about it. And when they get nervous, they're going to make mistakes. And when they make mistakes, it's the people that pay the price. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.